It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM WRIR. I'm your host, Marty Wegbrink. This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show...
Especially in Southern Virginia, the biggest concern that we have is about how uranium is mined and the climate in which it is mined. Virginia is unique. Other parts of the world where uranium is mined have a different climate. They are a drier climate. And as a consequence, we are very concerned about flooding and runoff. And in thinking about bringing uranium to a level in the, you know, by bringing it up to where there are either tailings in the air or there is the potential for contamination of the water table, these are very, very serious questions that require a great deal of consideration before we can say that they would be done safely. And so for a great many reasons, the localities and jurisdictions throughout the region that potentially would be affected by water runoff, in the case of Southern Virginia, we're talking about Pennsylvania County and potential water runoff into Lake Gaston and all the tributaries that derive water downstream, all of those jurisdictions are firmly opposed, I think, to the mining of uranium and are arguing that we maintain the current ban on mining uranium in Virginia. I think that's wise. I think most of the scientific studies that I have seen have raised very serious questions. No one has said, no, you can never do this, but almost all of them have said to do this would require a great deal of consideration and some very serious questions have to be answered. And I think that's where we are on this. We're saying this is not the time to lift the ban on uranium mining. It would not benefit Virginians in the ways that are being argued, and the risks are very great.
Marco Grimaldo, CEO and President of the Virginia Interfaith Center for Public Policy, discusses poverty, at-risk children, health care, immigration, and other issues that ought to be on the minds of our legislators now that the 2013 Virginia General Assembly session has finished its first week. And during this week's News You Can Use, we provide the information about wage claims that the Virginia Department of Labor and Industry mysteriously has removed from its website. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 193, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. And now, this week's News You Can Use. As of July 1, 2012, the Virginia Department of Labor and Industry no longer handled any claims for unpaid wages. No wage claims were accepted, and all wage claim investigators were reassigned or let go. For the next 6 months, assistance was potentially available from the law firm of Dunlap Weaver, special counsel, but only if your claim for unpaid wages was a minimum of $2,500 and you had documentary evidence to support your claim. Now even that assistance is gone, and neither the Department of Labor and Industry nor special counsel helps with wage claims. Sadly, the problem of wage theft in Virginia is large and growing. From 2008 through 2011, the Department of Labor and Industry received almost 9,900 claims for unpaid wages and recovered more than $1.5 million in unpaid wages. Wage theft enforcement efforts benefit not only the workers who have been cheated out of their wages, but also benefits honest employers who are complying with the law by paying their workers and are at a competitive disadvantage when compared with employers who do not pay their workers. The need for an efficient, out-of-court way to handle wage theft and adequate funding for the investigation and enforcement of wage payment laws has never been greater. But Virginia workers simply have been abandoned by a government which no longer cares to enforce its own laws. Workers now must pursue all claims for unpaid wages on their own through the General District Court. Here's how. You can file a warrant and debt against your employer in the General District Court. You can file a lawsuit in the Small Claims Division, where attorneys are not allowed, for up to $5,000. You can file a lawsuit in the regular division, where attorneys are allowed, for up to $2,500. You may file in either division, on your own, by yourself, without an attorney. Go to the General District Court Clerk's office and fill out a warrant and debt. You will need to state in a few words why the person or business you are suing owes you money. You also need to state the most money you could be owed. You can't get a judgment for any amount larger than what you sue for. You must file in the city or county where the person or business you want to sue is located or where your claim for money arose. With this week's News You Can Use, this is your host, Marty Wegbright. Last week, we began a conversation with Marco Grimaldo, CEO and President of the Virginia Interfaith Center for Public Policy, about issues before the 2013 Virginia General Assembly that started on January 9. Here is the second part of that two-part interview. Now, the other two big issues that the Virginia Interfaith Center for Public Policy is, I understand, going to be working on in the Virginia General Assembly in 2013 is stewardship of creation and also at-risk children. And stewardship of creation, I think, is a nice phrase for, you know, protection of the environment. And I guess top of the list there is the current ban on uranium mining in Virginia. Would you tell our listening audience what that ban is and why the center feels it's important to keep it in place?
So for about 30 years now, there's been a ban or a moratorium on mining uranium in Virginia. That's been an important set of decisions that, you know, some 30 years ago, the deposits that were discovered in southern Virginia and in northern Virginia, there was a question, can mining be done safely, reasonably, profitably in these places? And I think the conclusion at that time was the risk was too great. There was too little known about how to do that safely, and the profitability changed over time. So maybe the question hasn't really been a very important question at times when uranium prices were relatively low, but now the opportunity, I think, has arisen because of some interests from outside of Virginia to try and develop those resources, and they've proposed mining again. Virginia Uranium, an organization that is, I think, owned by some Canadian interests, has come to Virginia and bought up some leases, and they are proposing to lift the current moratorium on uranium in Virginia.
And what are the risks that we have been so concerned about over the past 30 years and should continue to be concerned about?
So there's a lot of them. They're outlined in a number of different reports. There have been a series of scientific studies, as well as a more recent conversation that the governor has initiated with the Uranium Working Group. So looking at all of those, if I had to summarize it, I'd maybe put it into a couple of different categories. There are others who are much more technologically savvy than I am who might give you greater detail, but let me just say this, that especially in Southern Virginia, the biggest concern that we have is about how uranium is mined and the climate in which it is mined. Virginia is unique. Other parts of the world where uranium is mined have a different climate. They are a drier climate. And as a consequence, we are very concerned about flooding and runoff. And in thinking about bringing uranium to a level in the, you know, by bringing it up to where there are either tailings in the air or there is the potential for contamination of the water table. These are very, very serious questions that require a great deal of consideration before we can say that they would be done safely. And so for a great many reasons, the localities and jurisdictions throughout the region that potentially would be affected by water runoff, in the case of Southern Virginia, we're talking about Pennsylvania County and potential water runoff into Lake Gaston and all the tributaries that derive water downstream. All of those jurisdictions are firmly opposed, I think, to the mining of uranium and are arguing that we maintain the current ban on mining uranium in Virginia. I think that's wise. I think most of the scientific studies that I have seen have raised very serious questions. No one has said, no, you can never do this. But almost all of them have said to do this would require a great deal of consideration and some very serious questions have to be answered. And I think that's where we are on this. We're saying this is not the time to lift the ban on uranium mining. It would not benefit Virginians in the ways that are being argued, and the risks are very great.
Now, the other issues that I see are on the Stewardship of Creation list deal with energy efficiency, renewable energy. What specifically is the Virginia Interfaith Center for Public Policy arguing for there?
So on energy efficiency, we've been working in the Richmond area with some partners with Richmond Regional Energy Alliance to better educate individuals and individuals in the context of their worshiping community about how to be more energy efficient in their homes and in some cases to learn about energy efficiency that might be applied to their own worship space, thinking about making energy smart choices for new appliances or changing their building or something as easy as repairing ductwork can often make incredible savings. I think that that often is the first step that many people take in thinking consciously about the decisions that they're making that affect the environment, that affect God's creation. And that's an important thing as we see it in beginning a conversation about the broader environment questions. I mean, the table we're sitting at right now is a sorghum table. The time this table was made, we were told that in fact this particular tree would have replenished itself. It would have grown again. That's an important decision that we've made. Try and choose, whenever possible, sustainable products, sustainable options that are conscious of our engagement of the world we live in, of God's world. So that's what energy efficiency does. I think renewable energy is a step beyond that. I think we're interested in seeing Virginia make good energy choices that include renewables in substantive ways and develop new renewable energy resources within Virginia. So we'd like to see an investment in renewable energy resources that are developed here in Virginia, whether they be wind or solar.
And what specifically is the Virginia Interfaith Center for Public Policy hoping that the General Assembly might do to foster development of renewable energy right here in Virginia?
There is a renewable portfolio standard in Virginia that is optional, and we'd like to see that addressed, whether there are a different way of parsing out the requirements or enforcing the local part of that RPS standard, that is to say that more of the renewable energy that's incorporated in the Virginia portfolio is homegrown, that is to say within the bounds of Virginia, or that the technologies are developed within Virginia. That means that down the road we're going to have an edge in using and maintaining and growing our capacity for renewable energy in Virginia, and we think that's a smart choice that the legislature could help us with.
And I've heard of it, wind farms off the coast of Virginia. Is that part of what the center is possibly pushing for?
Well, I think that's a real option because, in fact, we're one of the few states that has been offered that opportunity to have offshore wind. I think that still has some work to be done on it to be able to come up at the legislature in an effective way.
And the other issue, before we leave this, is dealing with clean air standards. What is the center advocating in that area?
So this previous year, the Environmental Protection Agency at the federal level implemented a series of rulemakings that were very important and especially important, I think, to Richmond, but to Virginia more broadly as well. And that had to do first with mercury emissions into the air, second with carbon emissions, and then thirdly with particulate matter. And so those new rules said that new energy plants would have certain restrictions on how much particulate matter they might release into the air, how much mercury they might release into the air, and the same with carbon emissions. We weighed in favor of those rulemakings and affirmed the new guidelines offered by the Environmental Protection Agency. Those are smart decisions. Let me tell you why I think it affects Richmond. I did not realize this until I moved here. I'm new in this job, about 9 months into it, and learned quickly that Richmond has some of the highest incidence of asthma of any other major city in the United States. Particulate matter can affect asthma. So can carbon emissions indirectly. Carbon emissions are those that are most likely to affect greenhouse gases and that make it hotter or make us perceive the temperature hotter than we think it is. It means that people with asthma may have more difficulty breathing in some cases. We think those are real concerns that people in Richmond and people in Virginia should be concerned about. We have the capacity to make a difference on that. The EPA has helped us by putting some rules in place that will guide our work in the future, and we're supportive of that.
And then the final issue that the center, I gather, is highlighting this year is talking about at-risk children and youth. What are some of the policies that the center is hoping will be adopted there?
That's a category that's broad, and let me talk about two distinct areas of that work. They may not overlap very well, but I think you'll see why we put them in the category. We're watching closely some of the legislation around the impact of state policies on immigrant communities. One of those has to do with recent immigrants and their eligibility to receive or to access higher education, and whether or not, for instance, they might get in-state tuition. There is a series of other positions that have come up in previous legislative sessions that have impacted immigrant youth, and we want to make sure that young people, regardless of their country of origin, are able to access our education system in responsible ways. We want them to be well-educated, responsible citizens of Virginia one day, and we think that that's a place where we can all agree. We ought to level the playing field and create a equal opportunity for all students.
Well, it sounds like that sort of dovetails very nicely with the, I guess, Obama administration's deferred action for childhood arrivals, that basically if you were brought to this country by your parents, and you were born in another country, you can nevertheless stay if you meet certain policy. And it sounds like this is exactly what the deferred action is talking about.
I don't want to say that we're proposing a deferred action. That's a very different matter. It is a federal matter that the president has put forward. I think what we're simply saying is that we ought to watch and support good decisions about education in Virginia, especially for young immigrants. I think that makes sense.
Okay, what was the other half that you wanted to talk
about? So the
other half
I wanted to talk a little bit about partly fits into the category of at-risk youth and partly fits in the poverty and hunger alleviation question. And it has to do with TANF eligibility. Virginia provides temporary assistance for needy families. It's a federal program that Virginia takes part in and provides part of the resources for. But we provide relatively little resources in that area for families that are struggling. These are families living below the poverty line. They get TANF dollars if they have especially dependent children, minor children. But we don't provide very much for them in the way of help. It is a help. It's an important help. And I don't want to minimize that. But we think we can do better. And we should especially think about, and we want people to think about, doing better, especially for the kids. One way to do that would be to find ways of drawing down additional federal dollars that could potentially be eligible to TANF recipients specifically for support of minor children who are in school to provide for back-to-school resources and clothing. So that is one proposal that we are hopeful we will see in this next legislature and that we would be very supportive of. It's a way of keeping children the priority, making sure that they have the resources they need to succeed in school.
Another issue I see highlighted has to do with child care subsidies. What's being thought of there?
In fact, you know, we don't have a lot of resources for families that are struggling to make sure that they can provide for their kids even while they are trying to, one, work and earn a living for the family, perhaps, you know, struggling to get by, or two, meet even the work requirements of other kinds of anti-poverty programs. So, you know, I've just said that some families who are very low income may benefit from TANF money. Those are cash payments to a low-income family to help them get by. But that comes with work requirements. So almost every family that's getting any kind of federal assistance is trying to meet certain work requirements. Well, what happens to those children in those circumstances? The question remains how we provide for childcare, making it more likely that families will be able to go to work and provide for the future in responsible ways. That childcare assistance can come through programs like TANF, and we would argue for making sure that Virginia law provides additional resources in childcare.
And then the final issue that I see highlighted here has to do with, it's a very difficult issue, has to do with human trafficking. And about 6 months ago on the show, we had a talk by Corbin Addison, who is an activist and a lawyer in Charlottesville, who spoke about human trafficking and how it has just exploded in the past decade or so. And it affects people everywhere, including in the U.S., including in Virginia. What is the Virginia Interfaith Center feel needs to be done about this increasing problem?
So after 2012 session, so just about 8 months ago, 9 months ago now, there was a new law enacted to provide resources and educational materials about human trafficking, both to public school teachers and administrators as well. In the upcoming year, we'll be working to strengthen those protections and to even maybe look at what some of the penalties that come to those who participate in trafficking of humans. This is really an area where, across our faith traditions, we agree this is unconscionable. We should not allow this in our communities. It is, unfortunately, a growing dilemma for us, especially with many new Americans coming in the Northern Virginia area, and I think it's a place where we could do better, and we hope to. Sexual slavery is one category of human trafficking. I think we're also seeing other kinds of human trafficking happening. There are certainly any number of labor abuses that are taking place, and oftentimes, especially in Virginia, we've seen, I think that's a larger piece of the puzzle. It's not all, you know, the sexual slavery piece of it. But I think that regardless of how people are being taken advantage of, we think it's wrong. Trafficking in humans, taking advantage of other people's lives, compelling them to work in settings where they did not intend is wrong. It's morally wrong and it's legally wrong, and we hope to do something about it.
Which is a good segue into my last question, which is, if people want to learn more about the Virginia Interfaith Center for Public Policy, even get involved in some of these campaigns, what do they do? Where's the resources?
So visit our website, virginiainterfaithcenter.org. That's all one word, virginiainterfaithcenter.org. The opportunity is to sort of look through our list of publications. We put out information about any number of these four areas. So if you want to learn more about at-risk youth, click on that and you'll get an email from us about at-risk youth. Or if you want to learn more about healthcare, click on that list and you'll learn more about healthcare. We'll try our best to keep people informed and then wherever possible give people the opportunity to connect directly with their legislators, with their delegates, with their senators, so that they can speak one-on-one or over the internet and communicate with them about the things they care most about.
Well, thank you very much. We have been speaking with Marco Grimaldo. He is the CEO and president of the Virginia Interfaith Center for Public Policy, and we have been talking about the issues that are going to be and are currently being discussed in the 2013 session of the Virginia General Assembly. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you.
Welcome back to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
I'm Michelle King for the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. Here's this week's legal aid success story, a true tale where justice prevailed. The Nunez family dreamed of owning their own business. After deciding to go into commercial trash hauling, they contacted their city government in order to complete the required documents. One was a franchise agreement, a thick legal document written in English. However, since their primary language was Spanish, making sense of this intimidating document was nearly impossible.
After contacting Texas Rio Grande Legal Aid, Mrs. Nunez was referred to its Legal Assistance to Micro Enterprises project. A member of the project assisted the Nunez family by explaining and reviewing the franchise agreement and ultimately helping her complete the application. With the assistance of Texas Rio Grande Legal Aid, the Nunez family was able to submit the required forms to the city and obtain the franchise agreement. Today, they are open for business. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Diane Dussault, and that's this week's Legal Aid Success Story, a true tale where justice prevailed.
That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. If you have any comments on the show, you can email them to marty@cvlas.org. In addition, every first-run Central Virginia Legal Aid radio show ever broadcast is available at www.radioforall.net. That's radio, the numeral 4, all.net. Then click the contributor link, then click Marty Wegbright, Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. This past fall, Gene Nickel, former president of the College of William & Mary, gave the keynote speech at the annual Legal Aid Conference. Join us next Wednesday at 12:30 p.m. when Professor Nickel explains why, if the U.S. sought membership in the European Union, they'd say we don't measure up because our justice system treats poor people so miserably. That's law for the rest of us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wegbright.